Okay, we're back. Next presentation is from Rob Peretti. Rob Peretti is the sales engineer for CubeTech North America, a vendor of audio archiving solutions. Rob's background includes record mastering, CD mastering, audio post-production, and music production. He's spoken at a number of conferences, including ARSC, the Joint Technical Symposium, SMPTE, NAB, and AES. Let's welcome Rob.
Maureen, thanks. So CubeTech designs and builds archiving solutions. They were one of the first companies to actually get into developing software, specific software for archiving, with the development of Quadriga. And at that time frame, that development sort of paralleled work that was being done by the EBU on the BWF. And so they were involved in working committees with the BEX chunk, the quality chunk, etc. So Quadriga was actually partly developed while those standards were being worked on back in the mid-90s. So where Quadriga is our, it was the ingest engine that sort of started our involvement in archiving. Dobbin came a little bit later as the sort of logical extension in creating workflows from those ingests. And so today I'll be talking about workflows in audio archiving. So exactly what is Dobbin? I mentioned it's a batch processor. It deals with workflows with audio archiving. It fits into the suite of our software. So in order to cover the case studies that that really is the focus of the presentation with how our customers are actually using these things, we need to get a general overview of the ingest stage and our management software called Cube Workflow. So the software are in those three areas, ingest, metadata, and post-processing. And Quadriga is a digitization interface, essentially. It's built specifically for archivists. Many people in the archiving community are not necessary audio engineers. So it's a purpose-built GUI. We can handle multiple streams, high speed, reverse, various things to make the job a little more efficient. On the metadata front, and actually more accurately, management, we have Cube Workflow. It will allow you to create efficient workflows between your ingest side, your post-processing side, deal with metadata, and actually drive the archiving engine. And then finally, for post-processing, we have Dobbin. Dobbin is a scalable batch processor that's driven by everything from human decisions to metadata-based decisions. So you can create rules that actually get work done without human intervention. The way the pieces fit together, there are interface... There are interfaces between the various software programs. So they're communicating bidirectionally as people are working. People are ingesting, and the supervisors that are interacting with Cube Workflow, which is a web-based application, know where they are during their daily tasks. And the metadata... You know, right with our software components, of course, we're interfacing through, you might have a legacy database, you might have an asset management system, so or it could operate as a standalone system, but we can capture information from your database and use it to actually drive the workflows. And back again. So I'm just going to cover maybe three or four slides for each of the tools before I get into a little more deeply into what Dobbin does and then the case studies. First of all, our ingest engine is Quadriga. So Quadriga, that's what the interface looks like. Quadriga can actually ingest up to 8 streams at one time. I don't know if I can get in there, but there, those are the buttons that actually control what machine you're actually looking at. And then depending on what machine you're looking at, the meters change, the event reports change depending on the machine you're looking.
This is a computer screen.
This is, yeah, you're looking at a computer screen. So you click with your mouse on one of those buttons, and now we're looking at the cassette deck. If you click on number one, now you're looking at your DAT machine or whatever it happens to be in your system. And we have audio stream supervision. One of the things about Quadriga that was built in is that we actually look at the audio stream and we do audio analysis. And we collect metadata, technical metadata on that analysis. And I'll cover some of that stuff in a moment. And the other aspect of it is once you start controlling more than one machine at one time, you need sophisticated transport functions and monitoring systems built in, especially if, for example, you're ingesting from a cassette forward and reverse at double speed. You need to be able to hear it, the reverse stream forward and at the correct speed and with playback equalization applied correctly. So we provide all of those things for the listener if they choose to listen. And, of course, part of this, of course, is that we're integrating with Cube Workflow and Dobbin. So I'll just whip through these. These are features that Quadriga have. I mentioned you can have up to 8 machines simultaneously. We can record from anywhere from half speed to 4 times real time. We can do multi-channel from mono stereo and up to 8 tracks simultaneously. We can ingest dual direction. Examples are half-track mono or quarter-track stereo for cassettes. And we can do this all with multi-format up to 192, 24-bit, supporting WAVE, RF64, BWF, MBF, MBWF. And we can dynamically switch on the fly. So if you get over the 2-gigabyte RIF format, it'll switch. We also have observation technology, error detection, and real-time audio analysis. And, of course, I mentioned integration with third-party tools. This is usually done by ODBC, SQL, XML. And all the products work through web services to share information. File security, we have the MD5. Started working on SHA-1 recently, and the file security code, which is sort of the MD5 for the BWF format. Quadriga self-logs everything that is being done. There are probably more logs than you even want to know, but some of those are that machine-based stuff that George was alluding to. That's very interesting. So things like coding history is automatically updated based on whatever your workflow is. And the system is very scalable. You can have a single box doing ingest to building preservation factories. So what does it look like? It's basically a computer. In more sophisticated layouts, you might have machine control devices that will connect to devices that have RS-232. Did I just skip over? What's going on here? I think I moved my mouse. Hold for a moment. Interesting. Okay, we'll skip through that. It was a diagram of 232 and 422 connections to control tape recorders, so that you have remote control of your machines. I mentioned the audiophile inspector, which does quality analysis. That's what the statistical screen looks like. Time-based events are time-stamped and displayed in an actual report list. Complete analysis reports can be actually stored in the quality chunk, actually, or exported as XML-based metadata. And you can store as many profiles of machines depending on the nature of your actual audio files. So obviously a quality analysis for something like a Scratchy 78 is not going to be the same as a DAT tape or a CD ingest. So the report look on Quadriga looks like that. And these are some of the detected events, everything from things like start of modulation, end of modulation, to sound or noise ratio, clicks, pops, etc. Now we get to Cube Workflow. Cube Workflow is our management solution that supports archiving teams. So when your system gets large enough where you've got supervisors and it's for a number of different reasons. You might have groups of people working on different tasks. You may be looking for a database to actually manage your archives. So Cube Workflow can provide all those things. So it can, first of all, be used in as a connective link to your existing database systems or asset management systems to extract metadata to drive workflows. The underlying structure uses business process modeling, so we can assess what your workflows needs are, and by dragging around those little boxes, we can actually recompile the software to be customized to the way you do work in your facility. The user interface uses an internet client, so it's easily customizable and updatable. It also simplifies deployment if you want lots of people having access to this information. Cube Workflow will actually generate your work orders for your archivists that are operating your ingest computers. So, for example, you can create an ingest document that will allow an operator to start recording without having to do any manual entry whatsoever. This simplifies the work, prevents human error, that kind of thing. Aside from the metadata sharing, we also share process service information so that supervisors that are using Cube Workflow as a supervisory tool knows where things are at within a workflow. One of their operators has got a problem with the tape. It's spliced, and that person isn't skilled enough to start splicing tapes together. He gets a notification to that effect, and he's working on the next tape, that kind of thing. Collected metadata can also be used to dynamically adapt workflows. So depending on what you're collecting on a technical level, some post-processing workflows might change as a result of that. An example of, and of course, collected metadata can be exported to your database management system or your asset management. An example of that would be coding history. You've just done an ingest, so George had an example there where by the nature of this software, coding history will get updated and you may want that information back into your database. So you can do complete supervising of your jobs and traces production issues with our bidirectional messaging. You have email and SNMP notifications. They can be triggered from workflow processes. And this information can also generate interesting statistical analysis of what's going on in your facility in terms of production. So that's a quickie on those tools. So now we're going to get into the core of it, which is Dobbin. So I mentioned that Dobbin is a sort of juggler of automation for audio processing and metadata processing. What I'll do is I'll cover, it's actually a suite of applications, and I'll cover those tools. So the first one is the Job Designer. The Job Designer is sort of, if anyone's played with Visio, it's a drag and drop tool to connect processing units, which we call the FPUs, linked together with audio stream, logic stream, and metadata streams, depending on the FPU and the kind of work that you're doing. I'll show you how some of that works in a bit. So we use wiring to connect these tools together. Once you've wired up a workflow, it will perform complete syntax integrity, and you can also test your workflow on a single file before you run it on tens of thousands of files. Jobs can actually be triggered, well, manually, but you can trigger them from the creation of a file in a directory, from file movement, from metadata criteria, statistical analysis, external applications. There's lots of different ways that you can actually trigger a job. So the kinds of jobs that we do are based on those FPUs that I mentioned. We have over 40 process elements. They're grouped in different areas. The first set are content analysis, so we can do the same type of quality analysis that we do in Quadriga, you can do in Dobbin, in the analog or in the digital domain. We have processing tools for remastering and reformatting. These include things like DDP conversion and multi-channel downmixing, metadata merging. We have file security tools, FSC, MD5, SHA-1, etc. Audio file encoding. We have a wide range of codecs, everything from MPEG, WMA, FLAC, MLP, Dolby Digital, etc. And then finally, we have tools to actually wire up and do the logic for decision making. I'll be talking a little bit about those as well. So here's what some of the other tools look like. From the job designer, you're creating the actual jobs. The job manager are actually allocating jobs to work units. So the job manager is sort of the front end to see what jobs are running, what the status of those jobs, etc. It also lets you reprioritize jobs on the fly based on whatever your needs might be. They can be filtered, sorted, etc. And, of course, job manager logs and timestamps all of the workflow processes. And Cube Workflow interfaces with that with the job manager, and that's how we know how Cube Workflow knows what's going on with the various jobs that Dobbin is doing automatically. After a job is done, there is a tool called the Result Manager, which actually lets you drill down into the various reports that it generates. This could be quality reports, tracking derivatives, etc. There's sorting and intelligent filtering. You actually get a waveform display. It uses web technologies. So this software can actually be deployed on any system of your LAN to access what is going on in the reports. And a further layer down into that particular, the result manager, you would get the result player. The result player, or the event player, I should say, is basically a Java-based BWF player that can also be deployed on any computer system. So you don't have to be on an audio workstation. It actually has a built-in sample rate converter, so if your facility standard might be 192, it'll put it onto your Sound Blaster audio card. That way, administrators can actually have access to playback of material. But more importantly, all of the quality analysis events you have access. I think there we're looking at digital zeros. And yeah, so the you can look at any one of the various events that we track. And then finally, we export this information as XML, and we provide you with XSL transforms for web access to reports and also for printing. These reports are easily customizable by any in-house web guy or us. And of course, as they're essentially dynamic web pages, they can be stored as internet resources that you can have access from your house or wherever. So, and the final, I was about to jump somewhere ahead here, but the final tool is the rule editor. So the rule editor is a small utility that actually creates rules that certain conditional branching modules will use to dynamically define your workflows. The rule editor, an example of that FPU is the decider tool. So it completely integrates your metadata schema from the BWF, and all of our tools are built in. And you basically use drag and drop. There's a drag and drop interface or an API that lets you create your rules. And then those rules are loaded into a module. An example would be the decider rule. So here's an example of whether or not something has an emphasis flag or whether or not something is a WAV file. And then they're used in a workflow. So in this particular workflow, we have a rule going into our decider tool that might, for example, determine that if you have X number of clicks, because we have a digital error checker there, if you have too many clicks in that file, it will fail. If it passes, it goes on through the rest of the workflow. Okay. So this is a little demo on sort of animating how the thing works. On the left-hand side here, you have all your FPUs, and this is sort of your workbench on creating your workflows. So you sort of navigate the tree, drag an element onto it, and then you connect pins. So you have a start folder. The blue pins are audio stream flows. And we have a very simple workflow here where we have an input folder that perhaps is your preservation master, and we want to create an MPEG derivative, so you connect it to an MPEG encoder, and then the output folder could be on your web server or some other location. Then you open up the MPEG tool, and you have your various settings to create MP3s. You set those. And the next step is you create a job template, which will also allow you to run an actual job. So there you have the name of the job template, the job. There are other parameters that you can set up. For example, a priority on that particular job, whether or not you're running the job as a one-off or you're using a watched folder. A watched folder means that as files enter that that start folder, that the actual workflow will be triggered. It's sort of like if everybody's knows how Acrobat input folders work, it works that way. Okay, so that's just an overview of how to you can create a job. Now I'll actually look at a few case studies. How am I doing for time? So I'll look at, I'm looking at four different case studies with various customers from very simple to a little bit more complicated. The first one is Library of Congress uses a Quadriga system to do cassette ingest. They have they ingest four parallel streams. The workflow is pretty straight ahead. Quadrigas all come with Dauben Lite, because one of the things that we automate in the background is to create our BWF MD5s, which we call the file security code. There's a few processes that happens when we seal a file. The process of sealing is creating an FSC for the audio portion and the metadata portion of the BWF. So there are actually two MD5s at work here. The first thing that happens is that the pre and post modulation of your recording gets moved into the private chunk. Create the MD5s for the audio data and the metadata. Then we move the material from the original location, which is called the pre-sealed folder, to the sealed BWF folder. And then in the case of LC, their server systems actually sweep the Quadriga systems at the end of each day and migrate that material to their mass storage system. I think that happens every evening. So the actual workflow is straight ahead. That's, you have your ingest folder, your Quadriga ingest folder connected to the file security code module, and then your output folder, which their server looks at. You have your Quadriga. I have a latency between what's happening here and what I'm getting here that's messing me up. But you have, it's just popped up. So you have the four cassettes going into Quadriga, and then Quadriga spitting out those pre-sealed files into our start folder, which is the Dauben watch folder. So as soon as it sees a file, Dauben triggers the event to start that workflow. And those pre-sealed files are moved to the first module, which is the file security code. So the private chunks are created, checksums are created, embedded, and then off to the output folder. The next workflow, I'll talk about three that the media preserve, one of our sort of private sector users, and they're actually in the coffee room. They have both Quadriga and Dauben systems. They run into a wide range, because they're for hire, depending on what the customer's needs, they run into a wide range of possibilities. So I picked three fairly simple ones. The first is to do quality analysis and create MD5s, because often they're exporting this stuff onto removable hard drives for use for other people. The second one is to create multiple derivatives. In this case, they create, very often will create their 2496 preservation file into a 16, basically a CD prep file, 16-bit 44.1 and MP3s. And then lastly, from time to time, they're creating derivatives with noise reduction, because intelligibility is important more than anything. So they'll do some gentle restoration completely in the automatic domain. So the first workflow, you have your input to the audio file inspector. An ingest folder is watched by Dauben. When new files are created, AFI performs the quality analysis. Then the MD5 is created, and the files are moved to a storage server. The second workflow, you can have you have once again either a watch folder, or you can set up just a standard manual process. Keep in mind that you can actually nest folders. So one output folder from one workflow can be the input folder of the next workflow. So they're essentially linked, even though you've got the granularity of creating separate workflows. they're actually linked dependent on how you set up your input and output folders. So the last one is creating multiple derivatives. So we have a start folder, and that start folder could include any subset of folders with files in them. And in the left path, we have our 2496 masters that are resampled and then dithered down to 16-bit to create a 16441 file. And in the right path, we have an MP3 creation. One of our other clients are National Archives. National Archives have their own ingest team, but they actually use a lot of local third-party digitizers, providing material on hard drives for them to load into their sort of final production processes before they upload this stuff to their mass storage system. The problems that they were encountering is they don't have control over those third parties, and sometimes they're not dotting their I's and crossing their T's, and they were spending a lot of time sorting out issues at digitization issues from these external sources. So they needed a way of automating the process of checking these files. And one of the bigger problems is actually just making sure that it met their in-house format standards. Make sure that it was a WAV file, it was at the correct sample rate, etc. And the second workflow that I won't cover that they use it for is to create derivatives. But in terms of the actual third-party digitization, they need to make sure that it's at the right sample rate, at the right bit rate, and the right channel count. And then they do a quality analysis, and interestingly, they also do a audio level analysis, because they do some normalizations for doing, some of this stuff is spoken word, and they want to make sure that intelligibility becomes very important, and so they do normalization on files. So on the right, so pass files enter their normal production workflow and passed on to their server, and then the failed files, they manually check them at that point, and then they contact a third party who digitized it. So in order to create the criteria for doing the various checks, they use the Dobbin rule editor to check for a WAV format, 24-bit, 96K, etc. The rule editor basically gives you an XML file. And that's an example of what it outputs. And then that rule gets loaded up into the decider. So this is an overview of the workflow. So on the left-hand side, you've got the various format checks. And on the right-hand side, you've got the audio analysis and loudness analysis. So we'll look at those individually. The first one is looking to... you've got your input folder going to a decider. And then that's going to a switch, and the decider loads up a rule that you created to check whether or not something was a WAV file. So once you create a rule, there's the isWAV rule, and you run it through. Failures end up in that folder, and passes move on to the workflow at the bottom of the screen. So now that process repeats for each one of the actual rules. So the next one we're checking for 24-bit. If it passes, it goes on. If it fails, it goes into the failed folder with the report. And onwards for 96K. And at each stage, if something fails, it ends up in that folder. That folder is the same folder. You know, you can have that same folder in various places. So they'll have the failed files with the reports, and then they'll use the result viewer to look at the list of the files that failed, what were the problems, and start contacting the various people. And then finally, after the mono stereo, we get to the audio analysis and the loudness assimilator, which does a report on the loudness for the file. And that's it. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
I've got a question about the sealed WAV files. How do those speak to non-QTEP systems? Can those be integrated into a workflow which uses other tools?
A sealed WAV is actually a BWF.
Right.
So the FSC is something that is CubeTech related. I don't believe anybody makes an FSC file. The reason why we have an FSC, as you can imagine, in the life cycle of a file that's, let's say, multiple gigabytes, if you change the metadata, which will often happen afterwards, even changing the coding history, or if somebody's collecting descriptive metadata, et cetera, you have to create the checksum. And as was pointed out, creating checksums take a while, and your computers are busy doing this stuff. So the whole idea about having the FSC is creating the checksum on the metadata is fairly trivial, as opposed to a whole, you know, 4 gigabyte file or something like that. So FSC is strictly a CubeTech thing. But if you load a BWF in a WAV player, it'll play just fine.
Yeah, I guess my question was specific to the MD5. So is that proprietary format?
No, MD5 is an MD5. That isn't proprietary. FSC is proprietary. So we actually have two. The reason why we have MD5 as well is the FSC, you sort of have to look as the MD5 for the elements within the BWF, whereas our MD5 tool, or the SHA-2 tool that we're building, is file-based protection. So when you move a file somewhere, you generate an MD5 that goes with the file.
I understand the workflow. I'm just trying to drill down on the sealed BWF.
Yeah.
If you take that into a third-party program, can you extract the MD5 for the audio portion and verify that using standard MD5 tools, or is that a CubeTech only? And then the second question is, it appears you also have the tool just to generate a standard MD5
yes.
for the whole file, but I'm wondering about the MD5 for the audio portion.
It is proprietary, so somebody would have to reverse engineer. It's not open. That the MD5, you know, it's
so
in a private chunk.
So if you guys go out of business, then you have to seal MD5 files. What are the options?
Right, out of business, okay.
It's a valid question, and the reason I ask is because most of us are trying to create enduring systems
right.
that are going to last till the aliens.
Okay, fair enough. Quadriga was co-developed with, and I actually was going to say this at the beginning, but I was sort of flustered, and Quadriga was actually co-developed with the German Public Broadcasting and the IRT, and in fact, the IRT owns the name Quadriga. So some of the IP is actually out there within German public broadcasting entities. I can't imagine if CubeTech were to fail that it wouldn't be a problem getting that information.
But it's a standard MD5 calculated on the audio portion. It should be extractable.
We don't do some funky encryption or anything like that. It's a standard MD5 within private chunks that are associated with the different areas of the BW.
So it strikes me that could easily be pulled out by someone who just looks at the header.
I would say, yeah. And if you'd like, I can check with the brains in Germany about that.
Well, I know the Harvard toolkit has a facility, I believe, for calculating MD5 for the audio portion only.
There are a number of open source for both MD5 and SHA-1. Yeah.
this is quite a toolkit, but I think it's worth mentioning. You can buy, it's very modular, right? You can buy the pieces that you need, and as your system becomes more sophisticated, you can build out those things. So you don't have to build out the, you don't have to buy everything.
No, you can buy a Quadriga system and use it as your ingest engine. You can buy Dobbin to do post-processing as you're ingesting Wavelab or from some other Pro Tools, doesn't matter. Cube Workflow can be used as a standalone database system just to keep track of, like, as an audio archivist database, because maybe the main database is more facility-orientated, and they might be interested in a subset of information that Cube Workflow is collecting. But if you don't, with Cube Workflow, it's a little trickier, because if you don't have Quadriga or Dobbin automating the process of that, it becomes, you know, you can do it in Access to some degree. You're doing manual entry at that point.
The push about the quality analysis, does that run real-time during ingest, or is that a post-process?
As related to Quadriga, it's a real-time process. There are, it depends on a number of things. For example, I mentioned that we can do 8 channels, and I mentioned that we can do 192.
8 channels or 8 streams?
8 streams, and each one of them can be 8 channels wide. And if you're doing 192, doing quality analysis on that amount at the same time needs a big computer. If you don't have that big computer, and the other thing is with Quadriga, the analog audio analysis is optional. The digital error checking is built in. So all those streams will do digital error checking in real time on the fly under the condition I just mentioned. The audio analysis stuff is a little more complicated, and it's expensive to do times each stream. It makes way more sense to do it in Dobbin.
Expensive in terms of processor time?
Both, because the licensing is per input stream. And the other thing is, if you're ingesting through multiple areas, like you have one Quadriga system and you have 3 Wavelab systems, well, wouldn't you like to do quality analysis on the stuff coming from Wavelab? So Dobbin makes way more sense because you just buy it once and it's doing file-based processing. So you can do quality analysis on all your various ingests. It is. That's one good aspect of the modularity of the system. Steve?
You just said licensing.
Yeah, when you buy something, you with software, it's almost all license based these days. Even when you buy Word, it's a license to use Word. So sorry, I use that.
Is there an annual commitment?
No. In fact, all of Qt Tech tools, and there, you know, if Bob Hyber was here, he'd attest to this because he's owned Qt Tech tools for 15 years, and he's had free upgrades for 15 years. So once you buy the license, you get that tool forever. It seems like so far, anyway.
How about customer support afterwards that you buy?
Well, that's been dear to my heart. My relationship, for the last, we'll say, 12 years, I did technical support for Cube Tech, but my job has sort of changed somewhere, so now I'm a sales engineer. So most of the technical support happens through Germany. I'm your first line of attack because I've done tech support for 10 years. I know the systems, and I'm a local phone number. All of our tools have something called Net Support built in, and basically it's a remote desktop that's focused on doing technical support. It does everything from, you know, remote connection to the or remote control of the device to doing inventory of software, hardware, etc., to help sort out technical problems. That's how we handle our tech support. Good. Thanks very much. Oh, another one.
A couple questions. Can you get me some information on what you use to jitter and downsample from, like, say, a 9624 to a 441? And what encoding software do you use to create the, internet derivatives, your MP3s, that sort of thing?
On the dither side, we're a big fan of Mr. Lipschitz, and there's only one good way of dithering, and we do it that way. I believe they use the MP3, they use lame. Thank you. There's a relationship with Fraunhofer. They're actually next door in the University of Bremen, which both companies are at. But for some reason, they've used lame. And I think it's because lame has a much better variable bit rate encoder. But I'm not sure. Is that it? Thanks very much.